Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
The Steve Austin Show Unleashed is sponsored in part this week by DDP Yoga. If you've heard this podcast before, you know that I love to talk about DDP Yoga, and it's helped so many people from all walks of life, and it can work for you too. If you haven't, head over to ddpyoga.com/Austin to check it out. DDP Yoga. There are no actors, no models. It's just real people with real transformations. For instance, check out Jared Mollenkopf, who DDP met on the streets of Utah. Jared had lost 190 pounds in 8 months of doing DDP yoga, and then fast forward 9 months later, and Jared's lost 313 pounds. DDP yoga can work for all ages, weight, and fitness levels. It provides a kick-ass cardio workout with minimal joint impact, so don't wait. Go to ddpyoga.com/Austin and check out the sale going on right now for listeners of the Steve Austin Show Unleashed. There's also the DDP Yoga Now app for working out on the go, available on Apple and Android devices. Again, go to ddpyoga.com/Austin and be on your way to not only changing your life, but owning your life.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production. He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio. And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is Steve Austin Unleashed. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. Sitting over here at 317 Gimmick Street. Now, I'm not sitting. I'm pacing around like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, trying to get back in my groove. Just got back from Nevada a couple of days ago, getting settled in. Finally got back on the weights. Got my eating program back installed. Turns out, going out there and getting away from the weights and not being so strict on my diet, hell, I didn't put on but 1 pound, so I'm pretty excited about that. Nonetheless, it's about getting back in a routine. I'll tell you what, it's kind of hard to get back in a routine when you've been gone for about, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 days. I was out there in the middle of nowhere. It was so quiet and wide open and beautiful. No pollution in the air, no sirens, no shit, no nothing. Just a bunch of mountains, a bunch of trails and roads to ride with UTVs. That's one of the cool things about Nevada. 90% of it is public land. And you can just go out there and pull off with your camper and just start enjoying yourself. And I did. I tell you what, I come back to this concrete jungle, and it's a little bit of an adaptation because, man, I got a little decent setup here. Mean streets of Los Angeles, my part in Marina Del Rey. But goddamn, man, my yard's about... Fuck, dude, it ain't very big. So I feel kind of cooped up. I'm still looking for another ranch. I'm kind of looking over in that Nevada area. And I don't need a big place because you got all that public land. And when I look at back at the Texas setup, we had 2,000 acres in the shape of a rectangle. And, man, that was a big-ass place. But you get out there and you start riding around Nevada and you got that whole state to fuck with, it's a whole different story. I'll tell you what, I got to get a compass or a GPS device because I get my ass lost out in that son of a bitch. That's a lot of country. I don't know how my damn brother-in-law knows that country like he does. It seems like he knows every square mile of that entire state, and that ain't no fucking joke. All of the units, I swear to God, I think he's hunted or trapped every single unit in the state of Nevada, knows it like the back of his hand. It's quite amazing, actually. But nonetheless, getting back here to Los Angeles, man, I walked in the house, unpacked all my bags. Mula and Callie were ecstatic to see Daddy had come home. My wife was kind of happy, too. I unpacked all my shit, put all my backpacks up, put all my hunting clothes up, put the suitcase up, took my gun out of the case, put the bullets up, put my gun up, got all settled back in, and goddamn, my wife said to me, if you remember me talking about on the Tuesday podcast, my pickup truck, someone made an attempt on trying to steal it. And I guess the neighbors kind of scared them off, and they spooked and got out of there. She said, you want to go take a look at your pickup truck and see what kind of damage they did to it? And I said, well, I guess I ought to. So I took my keys out there. I tried to open the passenger side. I couldn't because when I used that Slim Jim to open the window or open that lock, I guess it did something to the locking mechanism. So I went down to the driver's side. It opened up, and then goddamn, I saw the devastation. Just tore apart my goddamn steering column. Tore off part of the ignition where they had jimmied down in their screwdriver or whatever they do to try to turn that ignition to get that thing to turn over and fire. You talk about a goddamn mess. When you own something and you've paid for it with, you know, your body, your cash, your livelihood. I'm proud of that pickup truck. I bought that something that's brand new. My Wikipedia page said I retired in 2003. That's the year I bought that pickup truck. I've had it ever since. And normally it sits over in the barn, the Broken Skull Ranch. I brought it back out here to Los Angeles when I sold the ranch. I get out there and I see my baby, my pickup truck, just fucked up all on the inside where these sumbitches, sorry, sumbitches tried to steal a sumbitch. And you just feel violated. Somebody been crawling around in your shit. You know, that's my pickup truck. I don't know how many bumps I took. I don't know how many roads or miles I traveled down to be able to afford to buy that son of a bitch. I've had it for 14 years, and now some fucking cocksucker wants to try to break in it and steal it and drive it off. I don't want to go on too much of a tirade here. Nonetheless, I'm very passionate about my fucking truck. And then my wife hit me with a kicker. She said, well, guess what? I said, what? She goes, you know, we had liability insurance on that pickup because you didn't drive it much down there at the ranch in Texas. So when I called the insurance company to tell them about the damage and to see if it's going to get covered, they said, no, it's not covered because it's not covered under the liability policy. And I said, well, motherfucker, you know, we just did that to save money because the truck was sitting in the middle of nowhere in South Texas in a barn. And I had liability to cover the other side in case I got into an accident. It didn't cover theft, personal property, all that bullshit. So not only do these low rent, low life motherfuckers try to steal my pride and joy of my pickup truck, they also fuck me out of the goddamn money it's going to cost me to get my pickup truck fixed. Because they tried to steal my pickup truck. You talk about a fucking screw job. Fuck the Montreal screw job. This is the Austin pickup truck screw job. And hey, I ain't sitting here pissing and moaning to you. I'm just telling you this story because if it happened to me, it could happen to you. When I think about it, at 52 years of age, as many cars as I've had, as old as I am, goddamn, you know, I've been lucky for this to be my first car that's ever been attempted or stolen. No one's ever tried to steal anything else that I've had. I don't even think I've ever been broken into. Shit, here in the main streets of L.A., I always read my neighborhood crime report. People get their windows bashed in. They leave their laptop computers on their seats of their cars. And fuck, they make off with it and steal all their shit out of it. So my point to you, the moral of the story is, shit. Well, here's another story. I was taking Cali and Moolah on a walk the other day. I walk them every day. That's what you're supposed to do with your dogs, play with them. And I saw this car on the side of the road, kind of a hunk of shit, but it was that person's car. And it had one of them clubs on the steering wheel. I was thinking to myself, man, who'd steal this motherfucker? Well, anybody'd steal that motherfucker, that's who. And whether the car was a hunk of shit or not, that's that person's car. And that's how they get around. They're proud of it. So it's very important to them. So that club. So shit, I might go get me a club. I might get something. I got cameras all over the place out here in California as far as our residence is concerned, but it didn't cover right there in front of my house on that curb. So maybe get a little camera installed out there, but back to the moral of the story. Lock your shit up. My shit was locked up. If you got to get a club, get yourself a club. Take all your personal effects out of your center console, your glove compartment. Just keep the bare necessities in there. Maybe your insurance card or your registration. That's what I kept in mind. I kept about $40 in that center console just in case I ever forgot my billfold, I'd have some gas money. These people were so interested in stealing my pickup truck and trying to be so efficient, they didn't even raise up the center console. They stole my money too, and I'm glad they didn't. But nonetheless, it could have been a lot worse. Neighbors spooked them off, and now I got to pay for the damage. It is what it is. So, goddammit, protect yourself. Put a club on your steering wheel, and I think... They'd probably been riding around casing that pickup truck for quite a while. I hadn't been driving it very much. I'd been going to Nevada, and I'd been driving my other vehicle. So it was funny It was funny because, well, it wasn't funny, but the next day, just yesterday, I was out there when the tow truck came and picked it up, and there was one of those cards, those business cards, stuck in my driver's side window. It said, "We buy junk cars." So I called both them numbers. I blocked my number. Nobody answered. "Hey, motherfucker, that ain't a junk car." And I'm wondering if that's the motherfucker that tried to steal my fucking pickup truck anyway. I don't got no proof. They didn't answer their phone call because I blocked my number. So I am suspicious. And while I was out there, damn work truck comes slow riding by, two dudes in it, real slow, about 15 miles an hour. I was looking at them and they was looking at me. And I was getting my truck ready to get on the tow truck. So I don't know what the fuck happened. But anyway, protect your shit. Move it around. Get you a club. Take your valuables out of your car. And hopefully you don't get your vehicle stolen like mine almost did. And to the guys that tried to steal my truck, go fuck yourself. All right, before we get to the rest of the podcast, talking about Ric Flair 30 for 30 and answering your question, I got a new sponsor to tell you about. It's called Hims. Hey, man, let me talk to you about my hair. You're probably thinking like, "Hey, Stone Cold Steve Austin, you ain't got no hair." But if you remember, Stunning Steve Austin had a lot of hair. Back in the day, I had them long-ass golden locks. When you saw that hair, you knew that Stunning Steve Austin was on his way to the ring to drop a stun gun and go Hollywood and Vine on a sumbitch. Well, you know men are sensitive about their hair. Sometimes it's an extension of their personality, and it's important for them to keep it. Bottom line is, men want to take care of themselves, and now hassle-free prevention and solutions exist with Hims. Hims is the wellness brand for the modern man. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, and more. Hims makes men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved medical-grade products, personalized recommendations, plus convenient confidential online consultation with a licensed doctor. There are no pharmacy lines, no waiting room. The products are shipped directly to your door. And Hims passes big savings along to you, offering prescription and generic products for just a fraction of the price. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show Unleashed, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair up to a $67 value for just $5 while supplies last. Go to forhims.com/unleashed. That's forhims.com/unleashed. And stomp a mud hole in the hair loss and walk it dry. One more time. That's forhims.com/unleashed to get yourself a trial month for just $5. Keep your damn hair stone cold. Don't need none.
Howdy, folks. This is good old JR Jim Ross, pro wrestling broadcaster and barbecue enthusiast, inviting you to join me every week for my podcast, The Ross Report, right here on Podcast One. Each week, I talk to the biggest stars in sports entertainment. We talk about the news of the day, MMA, wrestling, football, and much more. Recently, I've talked to such folks as Chris Jericho, Kane, Sonny, the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, and Emmy winner Rory Carp. Download and listen to The Ross Report every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com, the brand new Podcast One app. And be sure, folks, to rate and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts.
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Steve Austin Show. I am sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street across the 4x4 table from my illustrious wife, Kristen, who's just been finished running errands. Goddamn, I've been sitting over here trying to pull up a podcast, and she ventured into the residence, and I said, here we go, a victim. Can you believe it? I was supposed to be Skyping today, and I was going to have a podcast with a guest. I won't drop the name because it's just a name drop. God damn it. I tried to fire up my computer yesterday morning, and the sumbitch would kick on, then kick off. Kick on, kick off. So you book me an appointment to go over to the Mac store, and I took it in. And somehow, some way, sometime, I spilled some liquid into my computer because the sensors were tripped. The dude asked me, he goes, "Hey, man, did you spill anything in this?" And I hadn't. And no. Like, shit, I don't know, 6 months. Have I before? Yeah. And I said, "No, man." So anyway, it wasn't the hard drive. He took it back in there, and he produced this picture of the innards of my computer, and there's like a little button in there that's been set off or whatever the deal is, and there were some other signs of some kind of shit in there. So nonetheless, It was going to take 3 to 5 days to rebuild, restore, reprocess, replace, whatever, and fix my laptop computer. So instead of Skyping and talking with someone about wrestling and some other stuff, I am sitting across the table talking to you about hunting mule deer and my trip to Nevada and how I want to go back. And I know we just remodeled our house, and it's nice, and it's a great house, and we love it. I guess it's our dream house, wouldn't you say?
It is our dream house. Can we move it somewhere else?
Well, I'll tell you what, if it was like that triple wide, that double wide down at the ranch, we could put wheels on it and drag that motherfucker across the state line. You know, California's interesting. I know you're born and raised here. You know, it's just I don't care who you are. I remember Phil, what's his guy's name? Phil Mickelson, whatever his name is, a golfer. He was bitching about paying California taxes a while back, and everybody was like yelling at him. Hey, man, dude's like making $30 million a year. He was just complaining about how expensive it is to live in California. Hey, man, it's expensive to live in California.
It is expensive.
It's 13% on top of your other taxes. So anyway, and the fact that we sold the place in Texas, we wanted a place close by, and Nevada's the closest place nearby. So if we could put wheels on our house and drag that motherfucker across the line. And here's the thing, because we wanted to buy more land, but if you're just looking, and all of your family's over there, so we'd be closer to your family. But it's not about just over there, because 90% of Nevada is public land. So you don't need a big piece of land, 20 or 40 acres, just have a buffer around you. And then you can access everything else on utility vehicle. You can put your camper anywhere. It's pretty phenomenal. It ain't Texas, because Texas is where I'm born and bred. That's where my heart is. But Manette Ranch is the biggest reason. The distance is why we sold that place. Nevada's a little bit closer. So the search goes on. But I'm telling you, since I got home, I'm having a tough time adapt, because I was over there for 7, 8, 9 days. How long was I gone?
It was about a week or a little over a week.
Yeah. I mean, the first few days, it was weird, because when I was about 80 miles out of Winnemucca, my cell phone service didn't work, so we couldn't talk.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
And that was weird, because we talk all the time. And I borrowed one of the guys' phones there who had Verizon. So, but it was peaceful as shit out there.
Yeah, and you come back here and we get sirens and motorcycles and tree trimming next door today. And I don't know.
God damn it. I tell you what, man.
It's loud.
I'm happy our next door neighbor decided to trim all their shit up. But they started right when I'm trying to do my reads for my podcast. Every time I start saying something about DDP yoga or off-brain or whatever, I got to start over. So, motherfucker, I'm about chainsaw it out. Every time I try to do something over, now I got this little studio over here. Every time I start talking, there's a chainsaw that starts cutting, a mower that starts mowing.
Or the trash truck.
Or starts blowing, a trash truck day.
Or the UPS.
UPS. Motherfucker, we get so many deliveries over here. Whoa, can we order any more shit for our house? Shit, she just came back. She got the Yukon XL. I just got that thing all depacked. I got to go get it detailed. And that motherfucker, now that it's all of my hunting gear, my gun and all that stuff is out of there, now there's a big shit pile of stuff from Crate and Barrel. What'd you go off and get?
Well, because I told you Callie had a little accident while you were gone. She was eating her bully stick on our new area rug in the living room and took a few nibbles and a few more nibbles. And now we have a big hole in the middle of our area rug. So I went out and bought an ottoman to put on top of it.
We already had an ottoman. That's the one that you got.
Yeah, but one that fits that design.
Okay,
style.
Well, check us out, man. When we were putting our house back together after we did an extensive remodel, I mean, we basically gutted the place. And the person that had the house before us kind of jerry-rigged a bunch of shit. So half the money was in repairs, the other half was in a remodel. We did a bunch of shit. It's a cool house. Long story short, it turned out really good. We're proud of it. And then the designer we're working with was trying to, you know, get us these high-dollar rugs.
Thank goodness we opted for the less expensive rugs.
God damn it. Talking about the high-dollar rugs. She said, oh, this couch is love seat. It's okay. It's custom-made. Okay, well, how much is it? $20,000. Me and my wife, I can't do this look that I always do when I get a high price at this right here. $20,000 for a goddamn couch / love seat / sectional? Are you fucking kidding me?
That our dogs are going to drool on?
Yeah, they fucking jump on, tear the shit out of. That last setup we had was from Ashley Furniture. Cost $1,100. Five pieces.
Five pieces.
$1,100. And I was sitting there thinking, I'm trying to rationalize this. Okay, we just did a major remodel. I mean, you know, she's trying to make the house look good. And this is through her eyes, but it's through our back pocket. And I just had to go back to my, well, not only my roots, but your roots, yeah, as well. We ain't the kind of people they're going to pay $20,000 for a motherfucking couch. So we let that be known. And turns out it all comes back full circled. The sectional that we ended up getting come from Ashley Furniture. And fuck, it just, what, it was under $2,000.
Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't very expensive at all.
Like $1,500.
Yeah.
And I got another one over here at the podcast studio for like $800.
Well, I made a green room, remember?
Yeah, I made a green room because she'd ordered too many pieces for the sectional.
So. But now we just have one single armless chair sitting in the living room here.
Anybody wants a single armless chair, tan in color? This, well, what's the set called? The Platonius?
What's I can't, Patola.
The Patola collection.
Patola Park.
Collection.
Wherever that is.
Yeah, I got an armless section of a sectional. If you want it, I'll sell it to you. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put this, you know what? When I get my truck back from the shop, I'm going to take out that driver's side seat and I'm going to put that motherfucker in. I'm going to have a lazy boy up in the cab of my goddamn pickup truck.
Well, I was going to give it to the Salvation Army, but since they gave me such a hassle last time about my donation, I figure I better not call them.
But you know the world's fucked up when you try to give a Salvation Army because you're trying to help somebody out.
Yeah.
And it helps you out because it gives you something, yeah, to do with something. You don't just want to throw shit away.
No.
And someone else can use it, because I was ambivalent to getting new furniture. I was fine with sitting on the old shit. Goddamn designer made me feel so goddamn shitty about it. I was like, okay, I'll get a fucking new couch. I just ain't paying 20 large to do it. What do you want me to do? Go back and headline a WrestleMania 34 to bite a motherfucker? Shit. Give me a razor blade. I'll carve up my forehead right here. I'll bleed for this motherfucker. Pay for it with blood. So anyway, with Callie tearing up the rug, the rugs we got are bargain basement cheap.
Yep.
Because,
well, I had a lot of coupons too.
You had a lot of coupons, but goddamn, here's the thing. And it happened just the other day. Callie ate something and she puked all over the one. And then the other one, Callie was playing like a motherfucker and she came inside for some reason. And this dog is potty trained. She's 8 months old now. She's going to be a hellacious dog. Shit like a crippled goose all over the goddamn house. And so why would you want to buy one expensive sectional? First, we don't pay that kind of money. Then she just ran in the room with a toy.
I just bought him some new toys.
And then, or buy an expensive rug or furniture, because these are rough house dogs. They like to lay up on the back of the goddamn couch.
Oh, yeah.
Buy no expensive shit.
Well, I understand her design element, but realistically, we would never do something like that.
No, man, but we come from Texas, man. I got double wide, triple wide, and when we got reclining couches over there, shit costs like $500. Man, I want to ask you, I talked about it on my podcast. I probably vented too much. If I did, I apologize. But, you know, Kristen, that damn pickup truck, I bought it brand new in 2003. And I'm proud of it. You know, everybody got to have a truck. When I met you, one of the cool factors about you, when I met my wife, Kristen, she had a maroon GMC pickup truck with a camper shell on it and a bed rug because she hauled her dogs around,
right.
Shona and Brio,
yeah,
who are no longer with us. And I was like, man, this chick's pretty cool. She drives a pickup truck. Now, you got points deducted when it was only two-wheel drive. But to your credit, I mean, in California, not everybody runs four-wheel drive because you don't really need four-wheel drive here. So anyway, I bought that pickup truck brand new in 2003. Give me the story, because what the fuck happened? I'm hanging out with your brother Mitch over in Nevada, and you said, hey, man, phone starts ringing. This is when we just got back to Mitch's house. And you said, someone just tried to steal your truck.
Well, I got a call from our neighbor, and she said, the lights in your pickup truck are on. I said, what? I said, that's odd. I haven't used the truck in a long time. So I grabbed the keys, I ran outside, and I get in, and sure enough, the lights are on. And everything kind of looks strange. And so I went to put the key in the ignition, and it's completely mangled. The whole steering column is upside down, and it just looks very strange. I said, shit, somebody just tried to steal this thing. So I saw my other neighbor across the street. I said, I think somebody just tried to steal Steve's truck. He said, that's weird. I thought I saw somebody in there, but I thought it was like a worker that was working at your house. I said, no, somebody tried to steal it. And he said, well, you know, maybe they scared him off. I said, well, they're going to come back. So I decided, well, I better drain the battery. So I left the lights on for a while, sat in the truck. I'm scouting around looking for people, thinking they're going to come back. Nobody came back, but I drained the battery. I parked the Range Rover bumper to bumper. So nobody, if they had to steal it, they'd have to ram the Range Rover and the Focus to get out of the street. So, but I kept on waking up through the night going out checking on your damn truck because I was so worried about somebody stealing it.
Yeah, when you're talking about the Range Rover, there's the range of vehicles we got over here. We lease a Range Rover. It's a business write-off. I got my 2003 Chevy pickup, and I got a 2003 Ford Focus with 65,000 original miles and a car cover in behind that motherfucker. That's my car collection.
And the funny thing is, I said, Steve, did you lock the Ford Focus? Of course I did. So what did I do? I go out, check the door handle, and sure enough, it's open. And you've got the car cover on there, so I didn't want to take the car cover off and have somebody probably sleeping in there. I just locked the door, put the car cover back down, and ran back into the house.
So someone could be locked in the Ford Focus dead because of you. No, man, the thing about it is, ain't nobody going to steal that Ford Focus. That's a damn good car, too.
Well, they don't even know what's underneath the cover. It could be something else.
Well, my Bronco wasn't touched. If someone stole my Bronco, I mean, you know, stealing my pickup truck's bad enough. If he stole that Bronco, I'd really been hot. The Ford Focus might have been a blessing in disguise. We need to get full coverage on this because I was telling people, because we put liability insurance on that shit because it was just sitting in the barn.
Yeah.
So nobody, you know, insurance ain't going to pay shit for this.
Well, and when the guy came yesterday to pick up the truck, he gave me some ideas.
What did he say?
There's a particular insurance company here that's available that you pay based on your mileage. So if, say, for example, we only drive the truck 10 miles out of the year, we pay based on our insurance coverage for that. And you can get comprehensive collision and liability. So, and then he also said that you can get these alarms now that you can, when you get them installed on your phone, on your vehicle, you can also put the app on your phone and let you know if somebody's stealing your car. So I thought that might be another option.
Well, how the sensors trigger or whatever, but I need something. I don't need somebody trying to steal my fucking pickup truck. I want to get a big bullhorn in there so that the app lets me know that they're stealing my truck. So that way, it turns my phone into a microphone. I can start cussing at the motherfucker to get out of my goddamn car for to come out there stomping mud all in their ass and walk it dry while I'm in Winnemucca hunting.
Well, if it's such a violation, but and you know, I mean, what can you do?
What I was saying. When I got home, I unpacked all my shit, and you said, "Well, you want to go look at your truck, see how bad they fucked it up?" And I said, "I might as well." And I didn't want to go out there because I didn't want to see how fucked up my truck was. And seeing it in the pictures you sent over to Mitch was one thing, but when you get in and send it in person, and you realize somebody had to grimy, greasy hands on all your shit.
Yeah, and I had just sat in the chair in the seat probably 5 minutes after they ran off.
Yeah,
I can't figure why they didn't take off with it because our neighbor said the vehicle was started. So I don't know if our neighbor scared them off or they couldn't get it in gear because they jammed the steering column so bad. I'm not really sure. So I guess we'll find out from the dealership.
Well, what'd they do? Turn it off when they left?
Yeah, it was off when I came outside.
And you heard it running because that's a loud-ass truck. I got exhaust on it.
No, our neighbor heard it running.
Okay.
Yeah, he said the car was running and somebody was in it.
God damn it. Yeah. Kyle is in here chewing up a damn toy that Kristen just bought for him. She's done it, destroyed the whole damn thing.
That lasted about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know. They don't make dog toys as tough as they need to. But if you need a tough dog toy, go to Tractor Supply and get one of these Stone Cold gimmick dolls. Oh, some bitches hold up pretty good.
And the belt. The belt works.
The belt works great. Yeah. People send me pictures all the time on my Instagram account, Steve Austin BSR, and on Twitter, Steve Austin BSR. They're dogs with that WWF title belt. That's a pretty good little gimmick. Goddamn, other than that, nothing exciting happened. But you know what? We really need to, and you brought the point home, we got a bunch of shit out there. We leased the one car. It's a write-off. We got the Yukon because I'm driving back and forth to Nevada trying to find a place.
But you always just have to have a truck.
I know. You got to have a pickup truck. We don't need a new one, so you just got to have a truck to haul shit around. And, you know, when we got that Yukon, we're going to put 300,000 miles in that son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
But the Ford Focus got to go. I mean, we just don't need that much shit.
I'm thinking it's probably better just to donate it than is to sell the thing because I don't think you're going to get much money for it.
Well, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter how much money I get for it. I mean, you know, should I, hey, man, here's a car. I mean, I'm a good-hearted dude, but when your mom hijacked me with that thing and then I had to put a new set of brakes on and a motor mount, I'm upside down.
Yes, you are.
And here's the thing about it. That little son of a bitch is fun to drive.
It is fun to drive.
It's front wheel drive, runs pretty good. It's low to the ground. It's a great car. That's the one we like to use to take our dogs to the vet because it's easy for them to get in. Callie, you're bothering the fuck out of me. We're trying to do a podcast. I got flip-flops on and she's clawing the top of my damn feet because she's trying to get out this toy.
Well, you're lucky she's not barking at you.
I ain't never seen a dog bark as much as this one. Make noises.
She's very vocal.
As hell. Don't, Kelly, I know you're fixing to bark. Don't do it.
Well, you know why they're over here is because it's close to you know what time. And I can't say the word because they'll go crazy.
Every
and I
morning,
can't spell it either.
Yeah, every morning when we're laying in bed drinking coffee, and all we have to do, I'll spell the word out to Mula and she goes crazy. And it's our little routine because the dogs can speak.
They speak Spanish. They know sign language.
And know sign language, and they also
speak
can
English
spell.
And spell, yeah.
There's some smart-ass dogs. You're smarter than me. I only speak Spanish.
You know a few words.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm working on it.
You're getting good, yeah.
I know, but, you know, for all the time I've been down here in South Texas, you figured I would have learned, but now we're looking in Nevada, so, well, they speak English in Nevada, so I guess I'm good.
They speak English across the United States, Steve.
Goddamn, Chris. I was talking on the opening of the show about heading down to South Texas because normally we're already there. And I know we'll be visiting our family here in the near future. But goddamn, normally this is the time we're at the ranch. November, December, first week of January, every single year for 10 years.
Yes.
And now, as we record this, it is November the 8th. And I just, speaking for myself, I just feel like I got my thumb stuck up my ass over here in California. Like I said, L.A. is cool. California's been good to me. It's a nice place and all that shit.
But it is nice to get away for the holidays.
Yep.
Especially, like, for example, today I went, did some shopping and some errands and things. People are already crazy out there shopping for Christmas, getting their Christmas dishes, their Christmas decorations. The stores are all decorated. I mean, I couldn't believe how many people were out shopping today, especially at Crate and Barrel. They got all the decorations out. So I'm amazed at how soon the holidays have got here this year.
Well, man, the thing about it is, I mean, like when I was in Home Depot a couple of months ago, I couldn't believe when they had the Halloween shit up. Now Halloween's over. There's a chainsaw blaring in the background. It's a Steve Austin show on Lee, so fuck it. It's for free. Fucking Thanksgiving's coming right around the horn, and they got the Christmas stuff up. But you know what? Your favorite holiday is Halloween. We'll put up a couple of decorations. We got some neighbors across about three blocks down, man. They go full tilt, man.
The entire house.
It's pretty cool. Because it looks like a fucking haunted house. But we just ain't into that. Now, for Christmas, we always get a little gimmick tree. It's about a foot tall. And our lights are battery operated. That's how big we do Christmas. That's straight up shoot.
Well, maybe not that we're here this year. Maybe we'll have a big tree in our
new house.
We ain't
got no big ass tree. We ain't changing nothing. We got our little system.
Yeah.
I love Christmas. It's a great time of the year, and it's more tradition and families getting together and stuff like that. But when we were kids, we always had a big old Christmas tree. And, of course, my mom took, that was our thing, decorating the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
But it just ain't our style.
No, not really. But I am looking forward to get down to Texas to see your family and I know you want to go see the ranch.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing. The owners have invited me to go back there and hunt. I don't really want to hunt anything. I just want to watch because don't get me wrong. Let's not see a coyote. I just want to watch. So it's going to be interesting to drive on the ranch. And if we go, I want you to go with me so we stay in the camper.
Well, and see what improvements they've made, how they've changed it, see how the deer have developed,
I mean, we left them with a good herd. I mean, goddamn,
yes,
I got so many pictures of some big-ass deer. That's one of the best ranches in South Texas. And we told them that going into it. And now, through all the pictures I've shown them, they see that all those deer are still there. So, when I'm talking about deer, you, me, and Teddy grew those damn deer.
Yeah.
And because it was shot out when we got it. So I'm proud of the deer herd, and the proof is in the pudding. We weren't fucking around when we said we had big deer.
I wonder where that phrase came from. The proof is in the pudding.
I don't know. That's a good random question. Where else would you expect the proof to be?
I'm going to send it to Steve Austin Show Questions or whatever you have it listed as.
Well, the proof is in the iced tea.
I'm sure somebody will write into your email and tell you where that phrase came from because your fans are pretty good about sending information to you that we've discussed.
If you know where the proof is in the pudding came from, because I'm not going to get on my computer, my backup computer here, and look up proof is in the pudding where the fuck it came for. If you want to send in the answer to questions, steveaustsugar.com, please do so.
They always do. So. So anyway, I know you just got back from hunting with my brother.
It was awesome.
How is it different from hunting in South Texas?
Oh, man. Light years different. It's interesting because in the Broken Skull Ranch, let's talk about South Texas in general, because that's the way everybody would hunt, whether it's a high-fence operation or a low-fence operation. In South Texas, because of the brush country, and the state of Texas is legal, but speaking of South Texas, because of the brush country and because the vegetation is so thick, you can't see, you know, really 85% of the land around you. That's how thick it is. So in Texas, you're allowed to hunt over corn. You're allowed to hunt over bait. And so many people, myself included, back in the day, you know, we'd get into a Bronco or a Kawasaki mule with a spin feeder and ride up and down the road. You feed the senderos. And in the daylight, you know, man, the deer would come out and start eating corn. Also, you've got your feeder set out, programmed to go off at an a.m. time and a p.m. time. That feeder goes off. They hear the rattle of that corn off that metal spinner. And, you know, as that day comes up, deer are deciduous, meaning white-tailed deer, meaning they eat twice a day. Once in the morning, once in the evening.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
That is true. And that's how you pattern the white-tailed deer.
So you don't feed in Nevada?
Well, hang on. A lot of the deer, though, Kristen, due to pressure from hunters, et cetera, and just being savvy and smart and having great ears, great vision, and a great nose, become nocturnal. So, I mean, a lot of those bucks, and you can't hunt deer at night in Texas, and spotlighting is illegal. So a lot of the bigger, more mature bucks or the smarter, big-ass bucks have been around for so long because they go nocturnal and you will never see them. And not every deer on the property will go to a feeder to begin with.
Right.
Some deer just aren't social deer. So the ones that do, that's the difference hunting. And when you hunt in Texas and you go to your deer stand, and that's what we had. We were hunting out of deer stands, and they were pretty nice. They were very insulated. But whether you're hunting out of...
Minus the wasps.
2x4, you know, frame with the plywood or just a lean-to or just whatever you're hunting out of, you're waiting, and you're waiting over bait. Well, in Nevada, you ain't waiting over bait because you can't. You're not allowed to hunt over bait in Nevada. And that's big country. You're looking at 90% of Nevada being public land. The unit that we're in, Unit 34, is probably a couple hundred thousand acres. So miles and miles and miles of land. And so, man, when we went out there, I was thinking, how in the fuck are we going to decide where to go? Because Mitch was working his regular job. He wasn't out there scouting. And a lot of times that's what they'll do. Go out there and ride around, you know, maybe 100, 125 miles a day. And you're scouting. You're looking for a sign. You're looking for does. You're looking for horns. And then, you know, at a later date, you'll go back to that area, and pretty much, you know, those deer would probably be in that same region. They might not be exactly where you saw them, but they'll be in that vicinity.
Right.
So with no scouting, we go over there. We're up at 4, leave at 5. We're out, shit, by 6, 6:30, unload the buggy. We start riding to a destination. We just kind of hold off, and the sun comes up. Then we start glassing. As you know from sitting in South Texas in a deer stand, because you had your binoculars, you know, you're looking at the brush line a little bit, but you know that those deer are going to walk out of the brush and into the clear to get on that road where you put the corn or to the bait underneath the feeder. Out there, man, you're just riding in thousands and thousands of acres just trying to spot the animals. And there's not a whole lot of animals to be seen to begin with. And you know, on the one time that you flew the ranch... And you got a little topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
When you're flying that ranch, I mean, even at our place, and we had a deer for about every 12 or 13 acres, you know, you still don't see shitloads of deer. Now, when you magnify that times all that that area over there, I mean, it's even less deer, less populated. So it's almost like you're trying to find a needle in a haystack, and then much less a great buck. So we got on top of a mountain one time, and Mitch and Royce, they get out these camp chairs just like I'm sitting in right now, and they have these tripod spotting scopes, you know, that are like 24 to 40 power, and they're glassing miles away.
Wow.
Well, this is kind of, you know, a lot different than what I'm used to, because we're only shooting a couple hundred yards at the Broken Skull Ranch or in South Texas specifically.
They'll be standing right next to your deer stand in South Texas.
Yeah, damn near. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so we're going to see a deer, and then at 3 miles, we're going to fucking go around the back road, come up the side of a mountain, sneak up on it, maybe to get a shot on it. It just seemed absolutely far-fetched to me. So,
wait, before you continue, let me ask you this. So in South Texas, you wear shorts and flip-flops to the deer stand. How was the weather?
God damn, well, I'm glad you asked that one. It's been so goddamn hot the last few years in South Texas. That's a shoot. I would hunt in flip-flops, my shorts and a dry fit shirt and a baseball cap. And then sometimes I would pull on my rubber boots just because they were easy to pull on and off. And if I was going to walk through the brush, I would at least protect my calves. But every year, by the time the season was over, my legs and my arms are scratched up from going through all that brush country. But I was, you know, most of the times in December, 90 degrees. You're sweating your ass off in a box. Well, not out here. You're in the big country, and the wind gets pretty severe in those mountain ranges. And I was really prepared for the worst, because when we went shopping for all that cold weather gear, I loaded down, and I layered my system. And I got to say, the shit was going to hit a few days into our hunt, and I was able to get a buck on the first day, so we stopped hunting, and we just started riding around. So, to your point, I had on my Magnum high-tech wrestling boots. Uh-huh. They're wrestling boots, or regular streetwear boots, or outdoor boots, or tactical. I had on my Magnum high-techs. I just had on a pair of camouflage regular bottoms.
So you didn't have to wear any of the stuff that we bought?
No, I used the vest. I used the jacket. Okay. That stuff. And then I put on my Carhartt on top of that. But I had my five layers on, and I had those regular gloves. We got those gray ones.
Yeah.
Those work fine.
Oh, perfect.
And then I used that baklava thing to cover up my head.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that sumbitch saved my ass, because my neck and everything, it covered
it. It's like a gator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that worked. And then I had my Broken Skull Ranch hat on top of that. And then I put a regular, you know, wool cap over the top of that. Yeah, but Kristen wanted me to get one of those things that you pull over your head. It's got the flaps that go down around your ears. It's got the chin strap on it. I said, fuck.
Well, your dad wears one of those. It's so cute.
I know. But I'm out there hunting with Mitch and Royce and Case. I thought Ned's going to make fun of me for fucking dressing up like a fucking sissy.
Well, I did see a picture you posted on Instagram where you had, like, shorts on, your high-tech boots, and like 15 jackets, and it looked interesting.
Oh, man, I'm all those guys. They said, who in the fuck is this idiot? Because the first day, like I told Mitch, I said, dude, I said, I guarantee you I'm going to hunt the first 3 days in my shorts before the system was going to blow in. And I didn't, because that first day was pretty cold, so I just wore those pants. But then after that, I said, fuck it. I said, I ain't trying to impress nobody. And here's the thing. Back when I used to wrestle on the road, we'd be up there in Calgary, all those cold-ass places in Canada, and I was wearing shorts 24/7. All the boys would tell me, God damn, dude, would you please put on some long pants? But back then, it didn't make sense to, because we were either in an airplane, in a building, in a hotel, or whatever. So it's not like we stayed outside. It was going from the rental car to the building, but we were always in something. But once we got out there and I got comfortable with those guys, I said, well, fuck it. I'm just going to wear my shorts. I just like to wear shorts. And my legs don't really get that cold. As long as I can keep my upper body warm and stay in those layers, I'm good.
Well,
I know I look like an idiot. And if you want to see the picture, it's on my Instagram account, Steve Austin BSR. We had found this on Mineshaft. That was the day after my hunt. So we were just joyriding. But Kristen, you would love going up there. Because you like sitting in the deer stand as much as I do and look at the deer. You're not a hunter, and you like riding as much as I do too.
Yeah.
The country up there is phenomenal, and it's just great riding. We're going to take a pause for the calls. Callie needs attention. I'm coming right back to answer to some of the questions that you sent in, the questions at steveaustinshow.com. Callie, thank you very much for making a cameo appearance. Good girl. Loudest dog in the world. Coming right back with part two. Word from a sponsor to keep his show on the air for free. Because it ain't worth paying for. When you're looking to buy a new car, you want to feel comfortable that you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar, you can get information that empowers you with pricing context and lets you see what other people in your area paid for the car you want. It's pricing you'll see before going to a dealership so you can feel confident when you show up. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing. When you're ready to buy a new car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Pro wrestling fans, join me 4 days a week on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where we cover Raw, SmackDown, the hot topics in pro wrestling, and interviews with stars on camera and people who work behind the scenes, such as ex-creative team members. New shows drop every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and you can hear me and co-hosts cover professional wrestling like no one else. With 30 years of experience, I cover pro wrestling with an independent voice, unaffiliated with any wrestling company. Recent guests have included Jim Ross, Teddy DiBiase, Jack Swagger, Lillian Garcia, Sean Mooney, Stan Hansen, and more. Find my show at Apple Podcasts, just search Wade Keller, or on the Podcast One app.
Hey man, are you hiring? Looking for great talent for your business, but short on time? Getting lost in a huge stack of resumes to find out your perfect hire? You don't need that in your life. You just need the right tools, smarter tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading boards with just one click, so you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then, ZipRecruiter puts in smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. Forget about juggling emails and office calls. ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. For the listeners of the Steve Austin Show Unleashed, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Steve to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed.
All right, guys, welcome back to part two of the podcast. Hey, man, before I get cranked up here on the second half and answer the questions you sent in, man, I want to say thank you to all the military guys that came out to the Broken Skull Challenge compound on this past episode on CMT. Man, the season really ramps up from here, and to go out there and spend all day with the United States Armed Forces, guys that served or are still serving in the Armed Forces, was an absolute blast. Those guys are cool as hell. They're all badasses. They're always ready. And Dan just totally crushed it all throughout the day. Just an impressive performance. But, man, when you get to go out there and hang out with the people that take care of our country and put everything on the line for us, for our country, it's an absolute blast. This season just keeps getting better and better as it continues with the women coming up next week and then just crazy off-the-chart stuff after that leading into the final show. But big ups, big thank you to the military guys for coming out and putting on the line for the Broken Skull Challenge. I had a blast hanging out with you guys, an absolute blast. Anyway, questions you guys sent in. And this one is a great question for the first one because it says, Steve, what are your thoughts on a recent Ric Flair ESPN 30 for 30 interview? I know he's one of your all-time favorites in the ring, and that comes from Eric over in Greenville, South Carolina. God dang, man. I got an invite to go down to the premiere in Atlanta to see it with Rick and Wendy, but I didn't get a chance to go as I was in Nevada on my hunting trip, and I couldn't make it all the way down to the ATL for that. But I got a chance to DVR it. I was watching the Broken Skull Challenge, and I watched it just this afternoon. And I turned it on, man, and I tell you what, it brought back so many memories. Because, you know, Flair has been around a long time. He's a generation ahead of me, or generation and a half. And I grew up watching Ric Flair. I wanted to be Ric Flair. Hell, the first part of my career, I modeled my style after him. Now, I could never approach what he was doing, but he was the guy that really had the biggest influence on me from an in-ring standpoint. And so that's how big of an influence the guy was on me. And just watching some of that old stuff, man, when you saw him first coming out of the gates, you know, with that big husky build before he had that plane crash and you know, he kind of developed into that 235-pound body that he wrestled into his greatest heights. He was just a big guy, a big football player, ex-football player. And then, you know, he kind of dialed in that character and was during that healing process that, you know, he took after Nature Boy. Buddy Rogers, and he put all the pieces together. And it was interesting to see Jim Cornette kind of recant how Flair was coming up with all this stuff. And, you know, it didn't all happen in one time. You know, it was an evolution of trial and error in the process that he was going through to put all the pieces together to become, to me, the greatest of all time. He's my favorite professional wrestler. And, man, I tell you what, that guy, you know, if there was anybody that was born to be a pro wrestler, it's Ric Flair. Just hearing the stories about his upbringing, being adopted, and then, you know, going to Vern Gagne's camp and then quitting, and then Vern Gagne hitting him with an open hand slap and saying, hey, this is something that you're not going to quit. You know, listen to Greg Gagne, Vern's son, tell that story was really neat. But, man, I tell you what, just reliving all that stuff. And I remember more of Ric Flair's career than I did mine. And just listen to all those promos, the way he lived, he personified the sport or business of pro wrestling, not sports entertainment. And you'll listen to Snoop Dogg, you know, give his comments on him, you know, what he represented to everybody. And, you know, that first title run, you know, when he took that belt from Dusty. And, you know, no one did it like Ric Flair. You know, whether it was just, you know, dressing to the nines the whole time, whether it was the women, the partying, the wrestling, all the hour broadways that he went, the traveling. You know, there's been some great, great, great pro wrestlers that everybody admires and respects, the Terry Funks, the Harley Races. Just those are a couple of the top, Bret Hart, you know, guys like that. But for the longevity that he had, traveling in that territory system and representing the NWA belt around the world and the loop that he was running, man, it's just flat out amazing. I really don't think anyone did it like Flair, and just living it up every night. And, you know, I looked at that thing as kind of being with the link that he had and you know, his dedication to the business. I mean, that was his first love. And, you know, he was very frank and he was very open. You know, his family was on the back burner of what he wanted to do. And when he went home, he was bored. He needed to be out there doing his thing. That's what he was born to do. And, you know, could you say it was selfish? Yes. I mean, you could psychoanalyze this a million ways, but I mean, that's just the business. Ric was the business. And, man, I'll tell you what, it was very in-depth. He was very candid. He was very open. And I enjoyed the living shit out of it. Ric Flair. And it was also great to watch Hulk Hogan, you know, give him so many props, because back in the day, you know, you would think that those two guys had animosity or heat or whatever. Because back in the day, I mean, it's like the one guy came on there and said, you were either an NWA guy or you were a WWF guy. And I was an NWA guy, hands down. Then I started getting the WWF stuff on television, and, you know, I could understand what they were doing, but I was an NWA guy. Now, when I got to WCW, which was NWA, you knew when you got there that the big time was the WWF. But back then, and, you know, as Hogan was the more well-known guy with you know, all the box office, Flair was that world-class worker that was lighting it up, like I said, on a more regional scene, but just tearing the houses down and becoming famous. Just two different careers, two different standpoints of looking at him. But just to listen to Hulk Hogan talk about Ric Flair and the way that he did was really, really cool. And just Ric Flair's impact on the business, my career, countless others. I mean, there's no telling, you know, how many people were influenced by the style, the career, the character, the presentation, the guts, the bravado, the showmanship, psychology, tactics, techniques that were employed by the Nature Boy. I mean, man, I'm just talking in-ring stuff. And then you go to the promos, man. And you watch that guy, because here's the thing. That guy was so far in, there wasn't a Richard Flair. It was Nature Boy Ric Flair 24/7. So, you know, he turned into that guy. it got him a lot of fame. It got him a lot of money. He became the greatest wrestler in the world, and he wasn't a great family guy. And they were very open in saying that. But anyway, I'm rambling. But goddamn, man, I just love those old days and listen to Sting talk about, you know, how over the top Rick would sell. And I remember those matches, and he made Sting. And when they did that test of strength, and Sting went down with that test of strength, and Rick just started wailing, you know, that's selling. That's the fucking veteran getting this green, charismatic Sting over and just, you know, coming into the ropes. Body press over the top, back down, you know, backdrops in the corners. I mean, just Flair being a rubber ball for Sting. I mean, he got that guy over, in my opinion, single-handedly. And Sting had great potential. He had great charisma. I loved him and Warrior when they were together as the Blade Runners way back in the day. They had something that attracted me to their tag team. And I think it was just that the awesome strength and power that they represented. They were certainly not great technicians in the ring, but of course, the charisma of each one was undeniable as they would go on to have phenomenal singles runs. But together, I saw them coming a long time ago. And so Ric Flair, going back to Flair, you know, really, in my opinion, and Sting got himself over. It was a great gimmick. It was a great look, great persona and personality. But Ric Flair lit his ass up, and that's the bottom line on that, and everybody knows it. And so it was nice to see Sting reflect on, some of those days. And, man, who can forget the classic battles that he had with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat? As I say, you know, Ric Flair is my favorite pro wrestler in the world. Ricky Steamboat is one of the favorite guys I've ever worked with and just one of my favorite professional wrestlers as well behind Ric Flair. Steamboat, just uncanny, always knows where to be, what to do, how to fill in the gaps, when to fire, and those matches that those guys had were just magic. And part of the magic was in the fact that the matches were psychologically sound. They were physically demanding. You couldn't see the transitions or gaps. You couldn't see into the match. You didn't see nobody talk, and Flair's protecting the calls. Ricky never said nothing. Ricky just did it. And so, you know, like Steamboat said, with the look of an eye, you know, Steamboat would know what to do, and on instinct as well. And from wrestling each other so many times, they just basically knew each other inside and out. But, you know, going back to what Rick was saying, who was it? Jesus Christ, was it Baby Doll? I'm sorry, I'm forgetting who was talking there at the beginning. It was the illusion. You know, wrestling's a work. But when you can't see what's really going on, that's when you buy in and you believe. And so a lot of times with today's current work, you see the tails. It's almost like, well, the guys aren't as slick as what Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, those guys were. The work was a little bit higher quality then. They weren't trying to cram in so much stuff into a match. And this is not an indictment on today's business. This is just a fact. You couldn't see through the cracks of what they were doing. They kayfabed it. They worked so well together. If you see somebody making a tell or leading into something or telling what the next sequence of events is just by what they're doing, they're already jumping into the next spot and the guy's trying to send the guy into the ropes. Well, they weren't doing that back in the day. So the reality of the matches, the drama of the matches was at a greater height. And again, not an indictment on today's business. That's just how good those guys were back in the day. And also understanding that, man, in today's business, and even, you know, when I was still in the ring or maybe a little bit afterwards, you know, the business turned into a faster moving business, you know, putting more stuff into a smaller amount, a window of time. Also because it's become kind of a short attention span theater. If you ain't doing something, if somebody ain't hitting the ropes, someone's going to change the channel, kind of that mentality. So some of the, some of the business has changed. I respect that. But again, I go back to what I've said a few months ago on a podcast. You put in some of those, you put in any Flair Steamboat match, you put in any Flair Wyndham match, those matches those guys were having was at a great pace. The matches he was having with Sting, every single match Flair was doing back in the day would hold up in today's wrestling scene, hands down, bar none, end of story, bottom line. People sometimes ask me, you know, hey, could Stone Cold get over in today's environment? Well, yes, he could. Or so does, you know, the work of Ric Flair hold up in even the fast-paced business that is today. That style, historic. I mean, you know, you could throw Jerry Lawler into that conversation as well. I'm talking about Ric Flair, of course, but, you know, Lawler's work, that methodical pace, that storytelling pace, you know, good work holds up. Good people, great talent hold up. They get over to the next generation. Flair was awesome. I've sitting here and just flapped my gums about it for 15 damn minutes, but I absolutely loved it. I thought that guy did a hell of a job putting it together. And Rick's got a hell of a story, and it was interesting hearing from his daughter and from his first wife. And if you have not seen it, hell, I'll recommend it at the end of the podcast for something to watch. The 30 for 30 for Nature Boy Ric Flair was flat out awesome, in my opinion, and let me know a lot about the man that I didn't know. Because as long as I've known Ric Flair, I've had him on the podcast a few times, I don't know Rick very well. I know that I got the utmost respect for him. I think he's the greatest of all time. It was just a very well done, very well put together 30 for 30. Congratulations on ESPN, the director, and for the Nature Boy Ric Flair for being so open and candid. Awesome shit. Here's one. Comes in from Kevin in Seattle. Says, hey, Steve, I just wanted to drop you an email and say I appreciate when you give a heads up on the Family Friendly Podcast in regards to dropping some cuss words. I'm on the road a lot with my family, and it's nice to have a heads up. You and Mitch have great chemistry and hope to hear from you again sometimes. Keep up the great work on the keto diet. My wife is on it, and she's about persuaded me to do it as well. Best regards. Hey, Kevin, I tell you what, if you need to drop a little weight, the keto is a very effective system to use. Man, just drop out those carbs. Eat clean proteins. Eat clean fats, good fats, avocados, you know, nuts, and stuff like that. Anyway, back to the heads up. Yeah, when I'm doing the family-friendly shows, I'll tell you, the Unleashed show is a lot easier to do because I like to cuss. I like for my guests to be able to cuss. It allows me to think a little bit more freely. So I give you a heads up. That being said, that family-friendly podcast, you know, it's going to have, you know, an ass, a damn, a shit, or some bitch in there. I'll keep trying to give you those heads up, but it is what it is. I, you know, never put any F-bombs on there because it's family-friendly, but I'll keep doing that. And I appreciate you listening to the podcast very much. All right, let's stick with another wrestling question. Steve, I recently watched Wrestle War 92, and that was, of course, the War Games match. You were busted open pretty early. You were busted pretty good against Brett in the I Quit match at Mania in 13. But, man, you looked legit hurt at the end of this thing. Knowing what we know now about blood poisoning and the risk of HIV, how scary it is now to look back and see 8 guys bleeding. Kind regards, Alex Prentice from Northern Ireland. Man, I tell you what, Alex, man, looking back now, it's 2017 with a bunch of guys bleeding in the ring. It seems like the dumbest thing in the world. Especially when you got there, you know, and it's not hard ways, it's razor blades. You didn't think about it back then. Towards the end and, you know, in the 2000s, you know, when I faded out in 2003, you started thinking about it more then. But really, and it's crazy, it's absolutely crazy to think that no one would give two shits. And guys were concerned, but that was just the way the business was. That's the way we were all wound up. That's just what you did. And believe me, it's a very foreign concept when someone comes up to you and says, oh, I'm not foreign. Well, if it's new to you, if it's your first time to get color, I said, hey, man, we need you to bleed during this match. Well, how do I do that? They don't teach you that in wrestling school. But to go back to your point, you know, as much as they test these guys these days, and I talked about it on the podcast a few weeks ago, you know, I'm all for color. The guys are all tested. Everybody's clean. It's just like a UFC fight. Somebody bleeds in the UFC or in boxing, all those sanctioned events, to sporting event, everybody's tested. So, you know, everybody's clean with respect to the diseases you're talking about. Same with pro wrestling. But going back to the mindset of the day, you know, when you entered a War Games match, you know, just about everybody entered that sumbitch somehow, some way was going to get busted open during the course of that match. So, it wasn't nothing but a thing like a chicken wing on a shoestring, man. Go out there, pick your spot, and get you some color. It was fun because that's what we were doing, and there's an art to it, and you know you're doing it to try to keep asses in seats or put asses in seats for future shows. And it went with the story, and the story was violent. And blood happens when things get violent in a wrestling ring, especially two rings under a steel cage that's called War Games. So it was fun. It was crazy. We weren't thinking about it. We were just doing it, hoping people were digging it. And that's the bottom line. You know, we're going to move on to the next question. And since we're just talking about War Games 92 and all the bleeding, here's another question about bleeding. And I'll give you an answer to it. It comes from Don Chisholm over in Nova Scotia, Canada. He says, "Hey, Steve, the WrestleMania 13 match with Bret Hart is my favorite match of yours. The psychology between you and Bret Hart is some of the best work in the business history. My question is, you asked Bret to blade you. How come you asked Bret to do this, and was it common for the wrestlers to ask their opponents to help them blade slash get color?" Well, Don, here's a story. I've told it before, and I'll tell it again, and it was also in Bret Hart's book. When we showed up at WrestleMania 13, there in Chicago, we went to the finish room, myself, Bret Hart, and Vince McMahon. Vince laid out the finish. Pass out in a sharpshooter from the pain. That was it. Go out there and do the rest of the match, whatever you want to do. But at the end of the night, at the end of the match, you're going to pass out in a sharpshooter. And so anyway, Bret and I both went out in the arena. We just kind of walked around a little bit, and I circled back there and went and talked to Vince. I told Vince, I said, "Man, are you sure about that finish? You think it'll work?" And Vince looked at me and he goes, "Oh, goddamn, Steve. Yeah, it'll work." And so I was sold, hook, line, and sinker. So anyway, I went back out to the arena, started talking a little bit with Bret. We were shooting the shit. And at the time, there was a no-color policy going on in WWF. Zero color. Don't do it. And, you know, Bret looks at me and he goes, "Steve," he goes, "if you're going to pass out in a sharpshooter, you need to have color." I looked at Bret, and you got to understand, I've only been in the company, I don't know, whatever it was, a year. I didn't have a whole lot of stroke yet. Bret was a veteran. He had stroke. He had a little bit of power, and he was going to use it. So he says, "You need to have color if you're going to pass out in a sharpshooter." And I said, "Man," I said, "I don't know, man." I said, "I don't know." And he goes, "I'll get it for you." I said, "You will?" He goes, "Yeah." So I didn't ask him to get color for me. He offered to get color for me. And what he was doing, he wasn't offering to just to do the act. He was offering to take the heat. That's the thing about what he was offering. He was taking the heat because there was a no color policy. Now, if Vince would have asked me what happened, I'd have lied to him and said I got busted open when I hit my head on that guardrail when he reversed me into it. That's what I'd have said. But nonetheless, what Bret was doing was taking the heat. And I'll give you, for example, when I was working with Chris Benoit one night on a Monday Night Raw, we didn't get enough time. We were working a live television match, and I was mad because I was such a fan of Chris's work that we didn't have more time and we didn't have a better match than we did. And so the next night, there in his hometown on SmackDown, we were working live to tape, and I told Chris, we had a short time. It's probably 13 minutes. I told Chris, I said, "Hey, man," I said, "I don't know how long we're going, but here's how we're going to do it. And I don't see you making a proper comeback on me. I see you just grabbing me and giving me 10 German suplexes or belly-to-back suplexes. And that's your comeback, and then we'll go into the finish." Shit, we had a fishbone of things carved out to do. We knew that was his comeback. And I told Chris, I said, "Don't worry about the time. I got it." So what I was telling Chris was, "Hey, man, I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin. If we're going overtime, if the old man, if Vince has a problem with it, I'm going to take the heat. I'll answer the questions. You're under my umbrella policy." That's what Bret did for me. I was under his insurance policy. He was taking the responsibility for it. And so that's one of the reasons why, first of all, I've always loved Bret Hart's work. I can't, he's one of my favorites of all time. And for him to pick me to come out of retirement, Bret Hart is such a big part of the career and success of Stone Cold Steve Austin is unbelievable. So to go out there and have that match with him and then, you know, to pass out in that sharpshooter and that iconic footage and that iconic photo of me just giving it everything I got to get out of that hole with blood streaming down my face, through my teeth, through my goatee and onto that mat was iconic. And that was one of the things that helped me get over to a large degree. So I didn't ask him. He offered. It was his umbrella policy. He was protecting me. He was the veteran, and he could explain his way out of this. And here's the bottom line. I came back from the match. Brett came back. Shamrock did an awesome job as a guest, a referee, enforcer. Nobody said shit. Nobody said shit because, hey, it was one of the best matches in the history of WWF. It was a big-time pay-per-view. We delivered. It was a semi-main, but goddamn it, we did a double turn. That's where the money was, and we did it, and we executed it. If you had to say 10 out of 10, 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10, that was a 10 out of 10 match. It was a 10 out of 10 execution as far as getting the business accomplished at hand and following Vince's orders. We followed his orders, and we added a little salt and pepper to it. So it was just an amazing time. And the cut was so minimal, it was unbelievable. The placing was impeccable. The amount of blood was perfect. It wasn't a bloodbath. It wasn't gory. It was a lot of blood, but it wasn't a bloodbath. And it was so simple. It was so easy and so effective. And that's how good he was. And that's, the best there is, the best was, the best ever will be. Man, I just got finished talking about how badass that 30 for 30 was with Ric Flair. But, same thing can be said with Bret the Hitman Hart. There are so many parallels of so many guys that have gone up and down the road and reached a high level of work in the ring. Flair was Flair, and he was one of a kind. And Stone Cold was Stone Cold, and he did his thing. But Bret the Hitman Hart was Bret the Hitman Hart, and he loved the business. I think anybody that has that kind of success or that run in the business, it's your love of the business and it's your selfishness to just forego. Man, Flair says he wasn't, the best father in the world. I mean, he wasn't. And I've openly admitted that as well. Man, I was always on the road. Now, I didn't get a chance to spend nearly as long on the road as Ric Flair did, or even Bret Hart, or many other guys. But, it was just, it's that love affair you have with the business. And there's so many stories that are similar to Flair's, but Flair just was able to, I'm not segueing off of what I was going to, or going back to the original startup on this part too, is, Flair just did it like nobody else and lasted longer than everybody else. So anyway, that's a good question, Don. I appreciate you asking that. But it was an umbrella policy. He was taking responsibility to help a brother out. And by helping a brother out, he helped get me over. And you know what? Going back to that Chris Benoit match on SmackDown, it was one of the biggest compliments you could tell somebody. And anytime you have a match, you always want to say, hey, thank you, man. Thanks for the match. That's what you do. And that's proper respect. That's protocol. Things might go bad. It might be a pile of shit. You might not click. The crowd might be the shits. They might be dead. You might not be over. The crowd might not be reacting. But that's what you do. And when I first got into business, I didn't know that you were supposed to thank your opponent after the match. I caught a little bit of heat about that because Chris didn't smarten me up to that. So back to the story with Chris Benoit. You always thank a guy for the match. But anyway, me and Chris met after the match, and we knew we hit a grand slam with that match. And Vince came out and interfered. And whatever he did. And we busted Chris open with that belt. That was a legit hard way. And he goes, man, thanks for the match. And, I was such a big fan of Chris. And I believe that he was a fan of me, and we genuinely liked each other. And he looked at me and had this look on his in his face and this look in his eyes. And he said, Steve, he goes, you really got me over. And that resonated with me because he understood what I was trying to do. And it was my job to get him over. And I did, but he had to get himself over by doing what he did. I couldn't just carry him to a great match. Fuck, nobody had to carry Chris Benoit, but he had to do what he did to get over. But yeah, I set the table for him and then he fucking ran it. But he thanked me. He goes, you really got me over. And man, it was one of the biggest compliments I ever got after a match by a guy that I worked with and a high-level guy at that. I always appreciated that about Chris Benoit. He understood what was up. He understood what was happening. And he recognized what I was trying to do. And that was a badass guy to work with. He was awesome. Goddamn, turned into a wrestling podcast after all. I got to ask this question by Lorenzo. Here's one. Steve, I'm a huge fan of you and the business. One of the things I enjoyed watching was hearing the glass break and the strings of that guitar strumming as the baddest motherfucker in the business walked down that ramp. But one thing I've always wondered is when you walk down that ramp with the BMF walk, you were always saying something as you walked. What would you be saying? Sometimes, comically, me and my friends would be mimicking you and we would be yelling total BS that made no sense. Do you just be shouting about being the baddest motherfucker, or do you sometimes shout in gibberish? No, I was never gibbering. Man, I was talking shit the whole way down. That's right, motherfucker. It was just a constant stream of F-bombs. Yeah, that's right, motherfucker's about to tear this motherfucker's ass. It was just that. It was sentences. And like I said earlier in the podcast, you know how Ric Flair just believed and was living that character. Hey, man, when I was in that world, when I was in that zone, and that wasn't no psych job, I wasn't trying to psych myself up. That was Stone Cold Steve Austin. And Stone Cold Steve Austin walked to the ring with that bad motherfucker walk because he was sending a message to the other guy in that ring. I'm fixing to whip your fucking ass. And that talking that shit, hey, man, hey, that's just in any competitive endeavor. Some people talk shit, some people don't. Also realize you're playing in front of 20,000 people and you're playing in front of a worldwide audience. You got cameras capturing the action. So, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, as Flair was smart enough to do, you know, dress to the nines, get the limousine, do the jets, talk about all that shit, take off his loafers and show it to you. And brag about it and make you hate him for it or respect him for it. Either or, same thing with me, just in a different fashion. What worked for Ric Flair worked for Ric Flair. Many people tried to mimic that and be that. No one ever did it like Ric Flair. Same thing with me, just in regards to that was one of my tactics. That was one of my techniques. That trash talk, that bad motherfucker. Hey, and as much as Ric Flair believed in his character and his persona, the same did Stone Cold. Dude, that's who and what I was, a bad motherfucker. That's what I was saying. Hey, you got to, one of my favorite things to say when I got on that turnbuckle, you have to understand the power of a crowd. 20,000 people, or let's talk about a big arena when you go to pay-per-view, 60, 90,000 people, and you get up on that second turnbuckle, and that was one of the secrets to my entrance. I didn't really acknowledge the people. I'd give them a sideways glance or be looking at that ring or be looking at my opponent once I was on the way to the ring. But my entrance started not when I just came out, was a glass break, because that was instantaneous spike. But I recognized the crowd by standing on the first, second turnbuckle. And then I first started hitting two corners. Then I changed it to all four corners to give everybody a photo op. You have to understand the power of a crowd, whether it's 20,000, 60,000, 90,000, or a small, intimate, and a more intimate, wild setting. You have to understand the crowd, the power of that crowd. And when that adrenaline spikes and you throw your arms up and you get that response, mister, it's an adrenaline shot that you will never, ever forget. So when I got that response from that crowd, all I was thinking, you got that shit right, motherfuckers. You got that shit right. We're going to raise hell up in this motherfucker. And so that was my key thing I said. You got that shit right, motherfuckers. Stone Cold Steve Austin here. I'm fixing to beat somebody's ass. That's the kind of shit that I was saying. Fuck. I done talked myself into a frenzy. I'm about to put on my Stone Cold vest, walk around the neighborhood and stomp the shit out of somebody. I'm just kidding. I'm just fucking kidding. I'm living in Los Angeles. I'm just kidding. Hey, man, God damn it. I enjoyed talking about pro wrestling today. I enjoyed talking with my wife. I only got to a couple of questions. I was talking about the 30 for 30 with Ric Flair so damn much. I sent Ric Flair a text message today telling him how much I enjoyed that 30 for 30 and what that guy meant to my career. And then now that we segued into Bret Hart, how much Bret Hart meant to my career. And it just makes me have so many fond memories of the business of pro wrestling. I love it. God damn it, I still love it. People ask me all the time. And, you know, I don't miss it. But goddamn, when you watch something as special as that 30 for 30, you watch a lights-out talent, once-in-a-lifetime guy like Ric Flair, and he kind of, you know, lets you in on what he was thinking. it kind of answered a lot of questions for me. Not questions about Ric Flair, but questions about Steve Austin. So I enjoyed the flying shit out of it. Hey, man, I'm going to come right back and I'm going to close this podcast down. I want to thank my wife for joining in on the beginning of this. I want to thank you guys for sending in your questions. I got some talent coming here to 317 Gimmick Street in the next few weeks. I've got some comedians coming over. I've got some MMA people coming over, a different mix of people. I'm trying to collect some podcasts for our ride off. And we try to hit Texas for a little bit, visit my mom and dad and see my brothers and my sisters. Appreciate everybody downloading this podcast. I'm fixing to light this son of a bitch back up. I got off on that hunting trip, and I appreciate you guys giving me a break. The podcast, Steve Austin Show Unleashed. I'm coming right back to wrap this motherfucker up, and that's the bottom line.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
What's going on, man?
Hi, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the team, Loveline, man. You guys remember us from back in the day? Well, we're doing a pod, and we're doing it every day.
And we've been doing it for a while, and if I hear one more time people say, God, I loved you and Adam together on Loveline, and I'm like, yeah, we're doing a podcast. Will you please just join us at the Adam and Dr. Drew Show, please?
Right.
At AdamandDrewShow.com. It's a great show. Come on now. Only on Podcast One. That's us. Adam and Dr. Drew Show. Just like the old days.
Doctor's orders.
Oh, man, you're funny.
Yep. All right. Let's go save some babies.
Let's do it.
All right. I'm about to wrap this show up and ride off in the sunset. But first, let me get you up on Alpha Brain from Onnit. Alpha Brain is a safe and natural supplement that helps support memory, focus, and cognitive function. Sound too good to be true? Well, the Boston Center for Memory found otherwise when conducted a double-blind study showing its effectiveness. Alpha Brain has been a secret weapon of champion athletes and business professionals for years, and now it's available for you to try for free by going to onnit.com/Steve. All you have to do is pay $4.99 for shipping, and they will send you a 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain right away. This is the same 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain that sells on Onnit.com for $34.95. And through this special offer, you can get it just by paying $4.99 for shipping. It's gluten-free, caffeine-free, made of earth-grown ingredients, and most importantly, it works. Onnit is only able to offer a limited number of free bottles per day, so get your free bottle of Alpha Brain now by going to Onnit.com/Steve. That's Onnit.com/Steve to get your free bottles of Alpha Brain now.
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. So I'm going to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to give you something to watch. You got to see it, whether you go to ESPN or maybe they got it on ESPN.com, YouTube maybe. You got to see the 30 for 30 Nature Boy Ric Flair. In my opinion, just off the charts, and I loved it. It brought back so many memories of my childhood and my adulthood as I was a big wrestling fan. And you know, Dusty and Flair and Steamboat and all those guys, man. And that's the shit that got me hooked on the business. And that's why I got into the business. And Dusty Rhodes. And goddamn, it was just a fucking blast. You got to go watch that, man. And you know what? I was supposed to talk. Like I told you guys before the podcast, I was supposed to have a Skype conversation today. And I fucking, whatever I did to my computer, I broke the cocksucker. And I had to pull a podcast out of my ass. And you know what? I needed this. It was a come to Jesus meeting for me. And just talking so much about wrestling just kind of lit a fire under my ass. So you know what? I'm glad I fucked up my computer. And I was glad I was able to talk a little bit about pro wrestling. Because, shit, quite frankly, I love the business so much. I love talking about it. But, you know, you got to have good shit to talk about. And I just love to have good conversation. And if you talk to, and what I mean by that is Ric Flair is out of the business. You can talk to anybody that's in the business right now, but you've got to be careful about what you talk about because people got to protect their careers. So that's what I mean by that. There's a lot of great things to talk about with people now, but not everybody can be as open and as candid as Ric Flair can because he's not in the business anymore. But just the fact that I was so enthusiastic about that show today and being able to talk about it on a microphone with you guys, believe me, I love talking, especially with a microphone in my hand. When I got something to talk about, shit, love to talk about more hunting. I would like to talk about different things. If you've got something you want me to talk about or people that you want me to talk to, I got a whole list of people that I'm working with my producer on right now, booking on the show. If you have somebody you'd like for me to talk to, if you have a subject that you'd like me to talk about, just send it in to questions at steveaustinshow.com. I try to read every single question that comes in to that email address. I respond to some of them via, you know, an answer on an email on very short ones. Other ones I'm able to, you know, address here on the podcast. But if you've got questions, comments, or suggestions, fuck, man, I welcome them. Send them in. Questions at SteveAustinShow.com. Hey, like I told you, watch the 30 for 30. Ric Flair, Nature Boy. Unbelievable. Great job. Hey, man, shout out. Keep watching Broken Skull Challenge on CMT Tuesdays, 10, 9 Central. These motherfuckers, man, they're about to really put it on a whole nother level. Shout out to the military. Much respect for coming out. The athletes that are about to come out on this show, you're going to knock your socks off. You won't believe this shit. Badass. ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all the shirts I'm wearing on this season and the ball cap, too. If you're thirsty, I got a goddamn good beer for you. It's the best IPA on the planet. Bottom Line, Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you don't live here, check out InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, which I suggest you get one, check out the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the new Working Man's Knife. And you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I want to say thank you one more time to the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. And speaking of Podcast One, shit, the new Podcast One app is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play. There ain't another podcast app like this son of a bitch anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. Watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in a room with them. So get to the App Store or Google Play and download the sumbitch. It's called the new Podcast One app now. Folks, if you want to follow me on social media, I am on Twitter and Instagram at SteveAustinBSR. In my spare time, I ride Kawasaki. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.